Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean, the weekend edition. First with yesterday's news and the day before. That's why it's the weekend edition. I'm Glenn ZB, and this morning we've got a lot of lion stuff. We've also got some royals stuff. It's very sort of Great Britain-centric, isn't it? But then we'll go to a completely different planet with the latest Cirque du Soleil production. So the Lions, before that sort of weird game that happened on Saturday night, here's Heather Duplessis-Allen, who was standing in for Jack Tame Saturday morning, just talking about the tour generally.
But you know, the thing is, I don't even think that the Lions fans really are going to mind all that much if the All Blacks win, because they know that the odds are stacked against them. And I think they've actually had such a great time visiting New Zealand. I think that's part of the reason why they won't mind. I was in Taihape last week, just driving through, and the locals were putting on a hangi for the Lions fans who were driving from the test in Wellington all the way up to Auckland. What a great experience for them. And then when I got to Wellington, I walked past a bar one night, or that night, it was the Sunday night, and a huge group of Lions fans were in the bar. They were sitting at the window. They were singing out loud. They're having a great old time, still buzzing from their win the previous night. I bumped into some Lions fans in Queenstown after a test match that they lost, and the Lions fans couldn't have cared less at all. They were enjoying the view, about to go off on a road trip. They thought it was absolutely stunning, our country. So we've shown them all a good time. They've had a good holiday. And what's a bet that they leave this country feeling impressed with how things are at this end of the world? They've come from a nation divided by Brexit and repeat elections and fear of terrorism to a place where we're holding victory parades for our America's Cup team. And we're getting into the spirit of a great rugby tour. And apart from a few hiccups with bad accommodation for some fans, this tour has actually gone without a hitch. Us Kiwis have behaved ourselves pretty well. We've been friendly and we've made them feel welcome. So, regardless of who wins tonight, but of course it's going to be the All Blacks, but regardless of who wins tonight, I am proud of this whole country during this tour, and I'm going to really miss seeing all those red jerseys around town.
Yeah, I'm not going to miss them in the stadium, though. It's been distressing to me looking around those crowds in the stadium and seeing... Sometimes it seemed like the red was outnumbering the black a little bit, and maybe that led to these... Well, strange results.
Geordie, I have to be honest. I did not know what to do when the full-time siren went last night and it was game over, drawn series. I felt like, what do I do now? This is not how I ever imagined the series playing out. So for you at that particular moment, what was going through your head?
Yeah, it was a bizarre feeling. Right? I didn't know what to think. It felt as though either team would have been willing enough to go another 10 minutes each way just to get a result and find a winner. So... It was a pretty weird feeling, but yeah, can't do much about it now.
It's interesting, Geordie. I've had a chat with Steve Chu, your Wanderers CEO, who said to me when they wrote the protocols for the series, it was discussed about having extra time. In hindsight now, I think that would have been amazing last night.
Yeah, so obviously can't do much about it now, but I think it would have been pretty cool deciding a winner, but... just one of those things out of our control, and we put ourselves in a good enough position to win the match, so that's why we had a bit of disappointment.
Geordie, I want to be brutally honest with you here, and talking with Grant Fox, you selected this afternoon as well. You had opportunities, and I say you as a team in the first half. You left points out there in the end of it. That was crucial come the end of the game.
Yeah, we did. We've learned that test matches you might only get two or three opportunities. And if you can take all of them, you can go a long way to winning a test match. So we feel as though we didn't take a couple of opportunities that sometimes we may have. But as I said, it's just one of those things and we can't do much about it now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the ref's copping a lot of flack for... I mean, he did cock up a lot of stuff, let's be perfectly honest. But so did the All Blacks. I mean, they seemed to spend the entire first half dropping the ball and the entire second half kicking it away. Very difficult to score tries without the ball. I mean, I'm no expert, but just from a layman's point of view, that seems to be the case. Anyway, but the ref was completely useless, and here's an ex-ref. I think he agrees.
Can we go through what happened, in your opinion, from the so-called accidental knock-on, as Roman Point pointed out, to Kieran Reid?
You know, first he was talking about Reid's challenge, which was, in my opinion, that's rugby. You know, you go for the ball and... people get bowled over every now and again. So that, to me, was a nothing. And then quite clearly, he was in front of his own player, and he knew that when he grabbed it and then dropped it. Said, I'm going to give him a sit here. And, clearly it was a penalisable offence.
So, Gary, in your opinion, and again here, people, ladies and gentlemen, we're not going simply at a referee because it's always the easy target here. But I have to ask you this, Gary. In that situation, knowing that history was on the line, he may well give away a penalty that hands the All Blacks the series. Do you think he panicked?
I honestly think he did, yeah. And, you know, we're taught this right from an early age when refereeing that ideally the referee shouldn't decide the outcome of the game. And, we all saw Craig Dubé's, circumstances in the World Cup, and that was hard for Craig because he was a decent referee for sure. And now they've widened the TMO role to, prevent situations like that happening, and they used it last night and it still didn't work.
Because that's the thing here, Gary, the TMO was the one who was still saying penalty.
Yeah, exactly. And it was. There's no doubt about it. It's penalisable.
Yeah, so that's all disappointing, isn't it? It's like when you have a really nice meal and you save that yummy last mouthful, and then as you're chewing it, you realise it's all gristle. And that's disappointing, isn't it? And you end up going blah, blah, all over your plate. Is that what you do? It's not really polite to do that, is it? You just bring the serviette up and subtly spit it out to the serviette. Leave it on your chair. Right, now, that's what you'd do if you were having dinner with the Queen. This is a desperate segue here. Penny Junor is a royal watcher. Heather Duplessis-Allen, we'll go back to Saturday morning again, and she can talk to her.
Now, I've had a little bit of a read of your book, and it seems that you have a soft spot for Camilla. Is that fair?
Yes, I suppose I do. I can't deny that. Yes, I do. Because I admire her in very many ways. It was an adulterous relationship with the Prince of Wales for many years, and her relationship caused havoc with the royal, with the royal marriage. But having actually really, really studied this woman and the story, I think she was not the wicked woman she's been cast as, that Diana cast her as. She was actually, I think, the saviour of the Prince of Wales. I think, it's very... Because Diana left us such a strong impression of the three in the marriage, we have really bought that story that the reason the marriage failed was because Camilla was in it. That was not actually why it failed. It failed because Charles and Diana were two people who were both very needy in their own separate ways. They'd had difficult childhoods, both of them, and they were insecure and needed bolstering. And neither of them was able to provide what the other one needed.
Yes, I'm sure both Diana and Charles had such terrible childhoods. Must have just been so hard for them. Very difficult to take that stuff seriously. I'm sorry. I'm much more interested in the latest Cirque du Soleil production, which is set on Pandora. Is that right? It's an Avatar meets Cirque du Soleil. Who hasn't been asking for this? Andrew Dickens talked to a couple of stars of the show.
So where does this whole show take place? How is it different?
Well, the show takes place on the same planet, Pandora, the moon Pandora that's in the Avatar film. However, it's a standalone prequel to the film, so there's no human contact whatsoever. It's set roughly 3,000 years before there's any human contact, so it's very interesting because we get to have an insight and on a creative level of a totally new world, where you've got all these creatures and clans and things that weren't in the film.
So like in the film, they're fighting against the miners who have come from Earth. Yep. In the prequel, are they fighting amongst themselves?
Well, as the title says, it's Turok, the First Flight. And as we know, Sam Worthington plays the character Jake Sully, who rides the Turok in the film.
Right.
Now, he's the first Avatar, which is a human scientifically embodying the body of the Na'vi. And our show is the tale of the first Na'vi who rides
ride these things. And I'm remembering them now. They're birdie dragon things that they ride all over.
Big red and orange creature.
Okay, so we've got humans playing. What are you? They're Na'vi. You're right.
Na'vi.
So, can I just say that Daniel is completely blue and has sticky outy ears right now? And I'll put photographs up on my Facebook page and all over the web as well because you look amazing. You are in full costume as
that's
per,
right, yeah.
per the show. Jessica looks like a human.
I do. Today I do.
But you get into the blue thing as well.
Yeah, that's my normal work outfit as well.
Okay. So we've got the Na'vi, and of course you've got the Tauruk, and we've got the flying. So the birds you fly, are those machines and stuff?
They're actually puppets. So I think it's probably the first time that Cirque du Soleil have done anything with such large-scale puppets like what we have in the show. So that's absolutely one defining factor of what we're bringing. And we use a narrator for the first time as well. And just the use of technology is so, it's out of this world. We have 40 projectors that sit in the grid above, and the floor space we use is equivalent to 5 IMAX screens.
Wow.
So if you can imagine all of the overlapping projectors just creating this immersive world, it's quite incredible.
So, that to me sounds awesome. Obviously, some people will think it sounds ridiculous, but luckily... that guy is on holiday at the moment, Mike Hosking, so I don't have to listen to what he has to say about things like that. I'm sure Larry Williams is really into sci-fi meets circus productions. Why wouldn't you be? I am Glenn ZB. That has been News Talk ZB in the weekend edition. I will see you back here again with more crazy stuff.